about moms, and I think you may identify with it. And it says this: every minute to and fro, that's the way my hours go. Bring me this, take the cat, feed the dog, take out the cat. Standing up, I eat my coffee, thaw the roast, empty garbage, bed, rush to church, then wash my head, sweep the kitchen, wax the floor, scrub the woodwork, clean the doors, scout the bathtub, bend myself, vacuum carpets, straighten shelves, eat my sandwich on the run, now my afternoon's begun. To the baseball game I go, when will there ever be time to sew? Meet the teacher, stop the fight, see the dentist, fly the kite, help with homework, do the wash, iron the clothes, put on the squash, stop for groceries, cash a check, fight the crowd, now I'm a wreck. Dinner time, it soon will be. For supper, well, just wait and see. Dirty dishes crowd the sink. Next there's popcorn, then a drink. Will they ever go to bed? Will I ever get ahead? Bring me water, get the light, turn off TV, lock the bike. Where's my pill? Hear my prayers. Did you lock the door downstairs? At last in bed, my spouse and I, too tired to move, too weak to cry. But ere I doze, I hear him say, what do women do all day? Father, we just thank you for this morning, and I thank you for the women and their excitement and their eagerness for their homes. And Father, I just pray as we do this session this morning that you will really touch the heart of the woman for her home in a mighty way, and bless us now as we share together in Jesus' name. Amen. When Bob and I were thinking about coming, and we had the invitation to come, you'll have a chance to meet my Bob. He's at our book table, and please go up and say hello to him. And he has authored a book this year, which I'm very excited about. It's called My Husband, My Friend. And this is a book that is written, and what it's written about is what a man needs and wants from his wife. And my Bobby has stood behind a book table for 12 years, and he has heard the heart of you women. And so that's what he is writing about in that book. And as we began to talk about our time with you, we wanted to be able to give you a tool to help you to be organized, so that when you leave this conference, anyone that comes to our workshop who leaves this conference will have a tool to be organized. So as you leave today, at the back table, we have provided at no charge for you a daily planner. So this is your gift from us. So thank you for coming. You're welcome. See, aren't you glad you came? You already got a gift. Psalm 118 says that this is the day that the Lord has, and we're going to rejoice in it. Not only that we're here today, but we're going to rejoice that we're going to get into the kitchen and we're going to clean it. I don't know whether you know it or not, but you are spending on an average of 1,092 hours a year in your kitchen. One lady said, is that all? And another lady said, well, I know I don't spend that much time. I've had women who come to me who have said, I don't cook, I don't want to cook, and I'll never cook. And it's kind of a challenge, you know. You just sort of feel, well, by the time they leave, I want to ask her, is she excited about maybe getting in the kitchen and doing something? But I find that when we get into our kitchens, what we've done is we've moved into this house, and the first thing we wanted to do was sort of get everything in the cupboards because we knew we were going to have to function something out of the kitchen. And so we just threw everything in, and we thought, we're going to get back to it later and organize it. But that was like 15 years ago. So what we're going to do is basically go in and open up all your cupboards, take a good look at it, see what kind of a mess you have in those cupboards. It kind of gives you a pretty good idea of what you have to work toward. Then close up all your cupboards, and we're going to move over to the kitchen sink, and that's where we're going to begin. Now, you will hear from me, particularly in the workshops, because I talk about 15-minute slots of time. And I really feel that we can do anything that we want to do. And if we just will be willing to commit to 15 minutes in a slot of time. For instance, if I'm in the refrigerator, how many of you just went into stress? You think the refrigerator. Now, for those of you who are melancholy's perfectionists, you look wonderful today because you are perfect. You would not come today if everything wasn't just perfect. Your hair, clothes, everything's ironed, everything. You just look wonderful. I have gone to some of your homes, and I walk into your house, and it's a total mess. And you think, well, why, if they're such a perfectionist, why is their house such a mess? And it's because the perfectionist says, if I can't do it perfectly, I'm not going to do it at all. So when you think about the refrigerator, you think, well, I'll never have time to get to the refrigerator. But if you would, the refrigerator is a piece of cake. It is not a problem to clean your refrigerator. On Monday, you can clean the top shelf, and you can do it perfectly. On Tuesday, you can clean the second shelf, do it perfectly. On Wednesday, you can clean the right drawer, Thursday, the left drawer, and Friday, the outside of the refrigerator, and by the end of the week, you have the refrigerator clean. And how much have you invested? Maybe 2 or 3 minutes a day. So that's what we're talking about when we begin to delegate some time. We're over to the kitchen sink, and we're going to start with the cupboards closest to the kitchen sink because those are what we call our prime time cupboards that we need to get in and clean. So we're going to schedule some kind of a time, open up your cupboards, and we're going to begin to work. Now, you want to get rid of all of the things that you're not using. You have 3 and 4 or 5 watermelon ballers. You know why you have so many? Because when you went to make a beautiful fruit salad, you couldn't find your melon baller. So you went out and you bought another one. And you've done that for 5 years. So you're going to find all of these things. And what you want to do is you want to eliminate those things. You want to zero down to the one thing that's going to be really important for you. You know, one of the things I talk about that you need in your kitchen is a measuring spoon. See, you only need one measuring spoon, not spoons, a measuring spoon. You have the spoons that are on the little ring, and they've fallen off, and they're roaming all around your drawer. And when you go to find the half a teaspoon, you can't find it because who knows where it is. So this is your measuring spoon. This is a measuring spoon. It measures a tablespoon on this side, a teaspoon on this side, and you flip it over, and it measures a half a teaspoon on this side and a fourth of a teaspoon on that side. So you see, it's going to give you more hours in your day right there because you don't have to look for all your measuring spoons. Another thing that you need in your kitchen, so that's 4-in-1. This is 2-in-1. This is a spatula. It's a spoon and a spatula. It moves like a spatula because it'll whip around your bowl, but it's curved like a spoon. It's scooped like a spoon. So you don't have to set it down to get a spoon. You can spoon into your muffin tins or into your casserole bowl. So you have 2-in-1. This is going to give you more hours in your day because that's going to save you a little bit of time as well. So you're going to take everything out of your cupboards. We have these cupboards, particularly some of these newer homes, because the architects have designed them, and most architects are men. So they don't know what we women really like, and they have this cupboard that goes kind of like straight in, and then it makes an L-shape, real sharp curve. Well, you've been stuffing things in that cupboard, and it's just kind of made the curve. Well, you want to pull everything out of there. You can't even get back there, so you're going to have to get a 2-year-old. Or if you don't have one, borrow one. And let them get in there, pull everything out. You're going to find melted Tupperware lids. You're going to find jars without lids, lids without jars. You're going to find little critters. Who knows what's living back there? And you're going to clean it all out and pull it all out. Then you're going to clean it up, repaper it if you need to, and begin to put back into those cupboards now the things that you're really going to use into the cupboards. So we're going to eliminate a lot of things. The things that you don't use very often, like your big platters and your big bowls that you use at Thanksgiving or Christmas time, they're going to go way up on the top. Get them up and out of the way because you're going to only bring them down once or twice during the year. Get your appliances repaired. There may be small appliance repair. Look in your telephone book and get those repaired. Now, you may have a tiny, tiny little kitchen. I remember we had moved from a 3-story house with a big, huge kitchen into a little tiny condominium that had a little teeny-weeny kitchen, and yet everything in that kitchen had a purpose. And I can remember I served over 50 football players out of that little tiny kitchen 1 year. So you can do, it doesn't matter what the size is. What I did was I had what I called a kitchen overflow. And I took all the things that I didn't use very often, like maybe the waffle iron, or maybe I had some cans of cranberry sauce that were left over from a Thanksgiving or a Christmas, and I put them in a box, and I called them kitchen overflow, and I put them out in the garage. And when I needed those things, I could just go out there and get them. But it helped to relieve a little bit of the cupboard space in the kitchen. Now, what about your junk drawers? Do we have them? Oh, yes, we have them. You probably have several of them. The junk drawers are fine, and it's okay to have junk drawers. You just want to organize your junk drawers. Get those little utensil trays. And in the utensil trays, you can put like your hammer and your screwdriver and all those kind of little things in there. And then if you take egg cartons, and if you cut the sections, the little cups out of the egg cartons in a strip, you'll have two nice strips. You can put those sections in your utensil tray, and you can put all your little paper clips, your little nails, and all those little tiny things. It doesn't cost you anything to organize that, and you can have them all organized nice and neatly. Now, it's not what you do that makes you tired. It's what you don't do. It's the things that we're thinking about that we don't do that we need to do. We get into the pantry. The pantry is just another closet. It's a closet where you're going to keep your dry goods, where you're going to keep your cereals and all of those type of things and your canned goods. We had a lot of children, and their children always had a lot of friends. And so what I did was I took sections of the pantry and I labeled them with one of those little labelers, and I would put like canned fruit and vegetables and cereals and that type of jellos and those type of things like that. And then I discovered I had a problem. The children would come in with their friends, and they would eat everything in the cupboard. So that when I went to make a recipe, I didn't have ingredients. So what I did was I took little red Avery dots, and I put it on all the food that I needed for recipes and my ingredients. And I said, anything that has a red dot, you can't eat, but anything else you can eat. It worked out wonderful. Another thing that I did was I would plan my meals. Now, planning your meals is really very important. I don't have necessarily on your outline this exact thing, but in our notebook, More Hours in My Day, this is a notebook that I have compiled of all the charts that have given me more hours in my day as I have lived through life. You will hear this afternoon that at one point in our lives we had 5 children under 5 years old. So it was really important that I was organized in order to work my family and in order for them to learn as they were growing up. I needed to delegate jobs and responsibilities to them. So I thought, well, how am I going to do that? I needed a work planner chart. I needed some kind of a chart to delegate jobs and responsibilities to them. Now, in this notebook, it has 12 organizational charts that will last you a year plus. You have, in the beginning of each section, it tells you the benefit, the purpose, and how to use each section of this notebook. But in here you have what we call the daily work planner chart. And this is what I did with the children. I wrote the jobs that needed to be done around the home on individual little pieces of paper, and I put them in a basket. And once a week, everyone would draw out of that basket 2 or 3 jobs that went onto the work planner chart. And when the jobs were completed, they could either color them in, put little happy faces or stickers or rubber stamp. Now, let me show you what a mother did out of a need. This I did and designed out of a need. I can remember in those days, you know, I didn't have it in a nice notebook like this. I just had charts. I was just making up my charts. It was kind of like trial and error. And I found what worked, and what worked we put into the notebook. But this mother designed something that really works, too. This is a little box of rubber stamps. And there are 16 rubber stamps in this box, and it's called a stamp-a-chart. And each little stamp has a chore, a picture of a chore. So, for instance, there's a picture of a bed. So if they get up on time, they make their bed, they go to bed on time, they get to take that little stamp and stamp it onto their chart. There's a picture of a cat and a dog, of food, of clothes, of toys. There's something about rubber stamps. Children will go over and pick up toys just so if they know, they can take a rubber stamp and stamp it onto their chart. It's amazing what happens. I remember this one mother. She said, well, I had a little girl. She's 3 years old. I couldn't get her potty trained. She said, but I knew how she loved rubber stamps. So I took the little happy face in the box, and I said, honey, every time you go in and you go potty, you can take the happy face and stamp it onto your chart. She said she just went right in and went potty. She came back and she took the stamp, she stamped it onto her chart. She said 2 minutes later she was back in, she went potty, she stamped her chart, potty. She said all day long she was doing that. By the end of the day, she's potty trained. We call it the potty training stamp. But you see, it what begins to work. You have to find what motivates the children and what will work for them. Another thing that we do is we have these little stickers, and we like to give the children positive reinforcement. And there's a little teddy bear on these stickers. There's 50 stickers in this packet, and the words written, I was caught being good. And every time they do something that you haven't asked them to do, you catch them doing something good, and you give them a little sticker. Our little grandson, he was 3 years old at the time, and it was in the fall, and Papa Bob was out raking up all the leaves and putting them in the barrel, and little Bevan goes over with his little hands, and he picks them up, and he helps Papa put them in the barrel. And Papa says, Bevan, you just got caught doing something good. And so we gave him a little sticker, and the other two grandchildren said, well, what did Bevan do? Well, he was helping with the leaves. Well, in 30 seconds, they had the rakes, and they were cleaning up, and they wanted to be caught doing something good. Catch your husband doing something good. Give him a sticker. He will love it. One mother said, well, I have a teenager. I'm going to give him a teddy bear sticker. And I said, yes, you're going to give him a teddy bear sticker. And she went home and she said, okay, every time I catch you doing something good, I'm going to give you this little sticker. And he goes, Mom, really? She said, but at the end of the week, I will buy back your sticker. She said, she looked out the window and he was out mowing the lawn. She said, he hasn't ever done that. I went out and I gave him a sticker and she said he took it. And at the end of the week, he gave it back, and I gave him $3, and she said, I never have to ask him to mow the lawn. All he wants is a little teddy bear sticker. You have to find what motivates them. You say, I have teenagers. They are so hard to motivate. They're a piece of cake. This is what I did. When I got into the kitchen, I would fill the sink with sudsy water. All the dishes went into the sudsy water. We had a rule in our family that nobody left the table empty-handed, so somebody always had to take something into the kitchen, and whoever did the dishes got excited about doing the dishes. Have you ever had children get excited about doing the dishes? Well, this is what I would do. Sometime during the week, I would throw some change into the bottom of the kitchen sink. Now, it could be 50 pennies, it could be 100 pennies, it could be 5 dimes, it could be 5 nickels, it could be whatever change I had. They got so excited. That was a reward above and beyond their allowance. What else motivates teenagers? The car. So sometime during the week, I would throw the car keys into the kitchen sink. This is good for 3 hours on Friday, 3 hours on Saturday, whatever. Now, you're going to give them money anyway, and you're going to give them the car anyway. Why don't you get something for that? You say, well, that's bribery. And I say, you are absolutely right. But we have to find, you see, what motivates those children. So here I wanted to please my family. I'm a Christian, but I came from a Jewish home, and so I'm still that little Jewish mother, and I want to please my family. So for breakfast, I would fix whatever they wanted. So in any one morning, I got pancakes, waffles, fried eggs, scrambled eggs, French toast, whatever they wanted. I mean, you're exhausted by the time breakfast is over. So I had this little problem in my life, and I thought, how am I going to get myself out of that? That's when I came up with my menu planner. So what I did is I decided I'd pre-plan all my breakfast menus for the week, and I incorporated everyone in the family, their favorite breakfast one morning a week. So I was making one person happy at least one morning a week. And that worked out so well, I thought to myself, why don't you just pre-plan all your meals? So I did. I went through, I pre-planned all my meals. You flip right over here to your marketing list. You check off on your marketing list everything you need at the market in order to make those meals. Now, you're going to be really excited about this because you're going to come home from the supermarket with food that you actually know what to do with for a change. Not only that, you're going to have some wonderful benefits. You're going to save money. Women tell me they save up to $36 a week on their grocery bill. They don't do anything different but just pre-plan your meals. Not only that, because you know what you're going to buy at the supermarket, you're going to be able to coupon and do it wisely and not clip coupons that you never use or food that you really don't want. So you're going to be able to save money in those areas as well. Now, when I came in from the supermarket, I would prepare the food. It doesn't mean cook the food. It means to prepare the food. In other words, I know from my menu planning how I'm going to use veggies. If they're going to go in a soup, a stew, a veggie platter, however I'm going to use them. They go in the sink. They get clean, cut, chopped, washed, parred, whatever I have to do. Put them in Ziploc bags, Tupperware, in the refrigerator they go. They're prepared for the week. The same thing with your lettuce greens. We eat a lot of salads, so I buy head lettuce, romaine, spinach, red leaf lettuce. Now, this is what you do with your greens. Fill your sink with cold water, and you're going to splash in about 2 tablespoons of vinegar. That will take off the spray, the dirt, and the residue. Now, I don't know about here in Oklahoma, but I know in California, they are spraying our greens up to 8 times before it hits our kitchen sink. So we want to get as much as we can off of that. And the vinegar and water does a pretty good job. Then you're going to rinse it in your colander, and you're going to, now you want to get the water off your lettuce, But we're busy women. We don't have time to stand there and watch it drip dry. So this is what I would suggest that you do, because if you get the water off your lettuce and you store it into your refrigerator, it doesn't get that rusty look on it. So what you want to get is a lingerie bag, and they look like this. You take all your soaking wet lettuce greens that are clean and rinsed, put it into your lingerie bag, take your lingerie bag out to your washing machine, and you're going to put it into your washing machine, turn your washing machine onto the spin cycle for less than a minute. Now that's going to spin all the water out of your lettuce. You will love it, trust me. It doesn't wrinkle, tear, or bruise your lettuce. Just don't leave your washing machine. One lady, she left hers in there for 3 days. Another lady totally forgot what I said and ruined her lettuce, put it in the dryer. So you're going to stand there, you're just going to let it spin around, bring it back into the kitchen, and now you're going to make yourself one nice big tossed green salad. Now, in Tupperware, in a refrigerator, you have a fabulous green salad that will last you a week plus. Now, what have we done? We've taken time to prepare here, but it's going to give us more hours in our day over here. You will gravitate to the foods that have been prepared. You want to eat right? Prepare your foods. If we put a whole watermelon in our refrigerator, what happens? Absolutely nothing. But the moment we prepare it, you see, everybody gobbles it up. Now, how do we plan our meals? What kind of foods? When we plan, we have to think about what kind of foods we're going to be eating. Now, I have co-authored a book with a very dear friend of mine called Sue Gregg, and it's called Eating Right. It is not a diet book. It is not a health food book. It is a realistic approach to a healthy lifestyle. My father was a Viennese chef. He was raised in the palace in Vienna in the kitchen as an orphan, and he grew up specifically to become a chef, which he did. Many of his recipes, as I have looked back, and many of them are in our cookbooks, are all eating right. Why? Because it was in those days, that was before the foods were altered, preserved, stripped, sugared, all those different kind of things. There are recipes in the back of this book. About 3 weeks, we have menu planned already for you and given you the recipes. But the beginning of the book has little fast chapters that you can read that will help you to understand why it's important to eat right. There's a chapter in here that says, what did Granddad eat? He lived to be 95. I wonder what he ate. Pretty interesting. There's another chapter in here that says, but I love my chocolate. Does that mean that you're never going to be able to have a chocolate chip cookie or a piece of chocolate cake ever again in your life? No, it doesn't mean that at all. In fact, in my complete holiday organizer book, this one right here, I have to die for the most wonderful, easiest, fastest triple chocolate cake you will ever want to put in your mouth. You'll wonder what you ever did without the recipe, because you can make it so easy and so fast, and everybody gives you compliments. See, I don't understand. You wrote an Eating Right book. You put a triple chocolate cake recipe in one of your other books. Well, see, I don't eat right 100% of the time. And if I don't eat right 100% of the time, I know you're not going to eat right 100% of the time. But if I'm going to cheat, you want to believe I'm going to cheat on something that's worth cheating on. And it's the triple chocolate cake recipe in this book. So you see, it's a realistic approach to a healthy lifestyle. Now, from that book, I was in Canada. And this woman came up to me and she said, I bought your Eating Right book on a rack while I was in the supermarket with my children. We had just come home from the doctor's office. My children have missed school. They've had allergies. We've had sickness. We've had medication. It's been awful. She said, we've tried everything. And I picked up your book and I thought, well, maybe I'll just make a few recipes out of your book. And I bought the ingredients while I was in the supermarket. And I went home and she said, that was 6 months ago. I ordered all of your cookbooks. And she says, we've been eating right for 6 months. And let me tell you what's happened. She said, the allergies are gone, the children are off their antibiotics, they have not missed a day of school, and she said, I lost 25 pounds and I didn't even go on a diet. Now see, that's what God-given foods do to us. God created our bodies uniquely and beautifully made, and he gave us a beautiful piece of machinery. But what we've done and what man has done is man has taken God-given foods and he has altered them. But when we take the fruits, the grains, and the vegetables, and we put them into our bodies begin to respond in a positive way. Our cells begin to rebuild. The main dish book has 5 months of menu planning. They're all high fiber, low fat, and low sodium. You say, well, I'm on extra low fat. We have 61 extra low fat recipes. We have a whole month planned for the person who says, well, I don't have any dietary restrictions. I just want to eat right. We've got that. What about the person who says, I'm a vegetarian? We've got a whole month of vegetarian meals planned. You say, you know, it wouldn't hurt us to have two or three vegetarian meals a week at all. And I'm not a vegetarian, but we eat a lot of vegetarian meals. What about the person who says, well, I have a diabetic in my family? This whole book and all of our recipe books are going to be perfect for you and your family because it's the type of things that we should be eating. Now, the most important meal of the day is our breakfast, isn't it? Do you know that 80 million people go without breakfast at all, and 60% of the American people have caffeine or Cokes or some kind of caffeine chemical for breakfast in the morning. So you see what we are beginning to do to our bodies. And yet, breakfast is such an important meal. The breakfast menu book, look how thick it is. I mean, this gives you tons and tons of ideas and recipes for good, healthy smoothies and shakes and a meal in one and all kinds of wonderful things that you can serve for breakfast. The soup and muffin book, 25 recipes for soups and muffins, a muffin batter that you can make up, put in your refrigerator. It can stay in your refrigerator for 6 weeks, and you can pull muffin batter out of there anytime you want fresh, hot muffins. Broccoli cheese soup, French onion soup. What about the children? We need to get our children into the kitchen. We need to be teaching them. How many women have come to me and said, you know, I don't know how to cook. I was in Pennsylvania doing a seminar, and a woman came up to me, and she said, I want to tell you about your recipe book. She says, they have saved my marriage. She said, I was a latchkey kid. I grew up, my mother went to work. She came home, and she usually would bring some kind of dinner home. It would be a sandwich or whatever. She told me never to go into the kitchen. My TV was my best friend. And she said, I grew up and I got married and I married a wonderful man who just happened to have a mother who was a gourmet cook. And she said, I was just so intimidated, and I'd gotten a recipe book for a wedding gift, and I decided I was going to go into the kitchen. I was going to make him my wonderful first meal for my husband. And she said, the ingredient called for a teaspoon of soda. And she said, I went to the refrigerator and I pulled out a soda. Now, my heart just breaks when I hear a mother, a woman that is so desperate in those areas. I was doing a seminar for baseball players' wives. And one of the young mothers came up to me and she says, I've never cooked a meal. I have two children and I have a prominent ball player for a husband. And she says, I've never cooked a meal. I said, well, what do you eat? She said, we either go out or I bring something in or maybe a sandwich or something. And one of the other ball players' wives overheard the conversation. She said, honey, I'm going to get those cookbooks. And she says, we're going to have some cooking classes. And within 30 seconds, she had 20 women over there to go to her cooking classes. You see, we have such a need. In Titus, it says the older women are to teach the younger women to do what? To love their husbands and to be a maker of a home. That's what the profession that God has given us. We have many other professions in our life. As Mamie was saying this morning, she never thought she would be doing what she's doing today. I never thought I would be doing what I'm doing today. Ever, ever, ever. But see, God had a profession for me, a homemaking profession. It's a God-given profession. All of you have it. Others of you may have careers and jobs and part-time jobs and all other things that are happening in your life. And that's okay, too. But our homemaking profession, see, is what is God-given. And so this woman who was so desperate, and she began to learn what the kitchen was all about. And I, growing up, my mother taught me, but you know, it is so wonderful and such a privilege that we have grandchildren today. See, we made mistakes with our children, and nobody's going to raise your children. You're not going to do it perfect. We don't have perfect children. We don't have a perfect marriage. We're working on it. We're always working on it. But the one thing that God has given me is a second chance with those grandchildren. And when we get into the kitchen, it's kind of like I used to get in the kitchen, and it was sort of like, well, don't make too much of a mess because I'm going to have to clean it up. But, you know, now I don't even care how much of a mess they make because, see, I know what's more important for their hearts than what's on the floor. And when they come into the kitchen, we dress up. They wear chef's hats and aprons, and I mean, they look like little cooks. It comes from my background. I always remember my father wearing a chef's hat and a chef's apron. And in the kitchen we go, and they go right to the drawer where they keep them. And we've decorated the aprons with little handprints. We've done all kinds of fun things. We've made it fun when they come into the kitchen. And so in our lunch and snack book, it has recipes for lunches and hors d'oeuvres and all kinds of things. But the bright green section in the middle is a recipe book for children. In other words, it's easy, fun things that children like. You say, well, what are they going to make? Well, they're going to make pizzas, quesadillas, sloppy joes, fruit leather, all kinds of fun things that are easy and fast. Now our grandchildren are getting old enough, they can read, and they can read the recipes. And so we've provided a tool for the children to be in the kitchen. The other thing I hear from women is they say, well, I don't have enough time. I don't have time. I'm busy. I'm working two full professions, my homemaking profession, my job, whatever I have outside of my home. And so Sue and I got together and we said, what can we do for those women that we can get them back into the kitchen? So my encouragement to you is that you can cook your meals in 1 hour a week. And so we did a casserole bowl book. It's called Meals in Minutes. It's a once-a-week cooking method. All you need is 1 hour a week. What we've done, there's 25 casserole recipes in this book. We have taken them and we have divided it into 5 casseroles per week. We have also made out the marketing list for you, so you do not even have to make a marketing list. All you have to do is take this little book to the market and buy the ingredients. Bring it home, take your ingredients, throw it into your 5 casserole bowls, and put them in your freezer, and you will have dinners ready anytime you need it next week. Now, you say, well, I'm not going to eat 5 casseroles next week. No, of course you won't. You may eat 2 or 3. You have those quick, fast emergency meals when you need them. The following week, go to the next 5 recipe casseroles and make 5 more and keep feeding your freezer. One busy working mom, she did exactly that. She said, I was so excited, I had 30 casseroles in my freezer. She said, I came home from work, I was exhausted. I pulled out this casserole and I set it on the counter and I was just ready to pop it in my microwave. And she said, my neighbor came over. And my neighbor said, oh, what are you having for dinner? She said, well, I have these 30 casseroles in the freezer, and I've been doing this book, and she went through the whole thing, and she says, I'm having this casserole, I'm just ready to pop it in the microwave. And her neighbor says, you have 30 casseroles in your oven, or in your freezer? And she said, it's 5:30, and I don't even have a clue what I'm having for dinner. You have 30 of those in your freezer? She said, I wonder, could I buy one of those from you? So she said, well, okay, so she did. She bought it. She took it home, fed it to her family. Her husband said, this is wonderful. Make this again. She said, I didn't make it. I bought it from our neighbor. And he said, you did what? He says, I don't care. Do it again. She was telling her other neighbor. Her other neighbor said, no kidding. She has 29 of those in her freezer. I wonder if she would sell me one. This woman could be selling these casseroles out of her freezer every day. She could have a whole business doing it. But you see what begins to happen? When we have that quick emergency meal, we have that meal that we're going to be able to have, we have a meal that we can take to the church, to a potluck when we don't know what we're going to do, it relieves so much of the stress. Now, what about the woman who says, I don't like to cook, I don't want to cook, and I can't cook, and forget it? We have something for you. And it's actually this little, it's like a little calendar, but it's not a calendar at all. It's called Meals in Minutes. And it just flips like this. And it has everything that you need to make your quick little fast meals. The ingredients are really 4, 5, 6 ingredients. It doesn't take you but a few minutes to throw it together. And we have done so that you can do 3 meals at once instead of 5 now. So if you really are the person who says, well, you know, I don't even have time for that, we've got this for you. So there's really no excuse why you can't get into the kitchen and begin to plan and prepare healthy, nutritious, and on top of it all, delicious meals. You say, well, is it going to cost me more to eat right? Each casserole will cost you under $5 per casserole to serve a family of 4 to 6. So it's not going to cost you more money. Yet what are the benefits? The benefits are going to be saving money. The benefits are going to be good nutrition. And the other benefit is it's going to taste good. So we would not even want to give them to you if we knew that they weren't going to taste good. Then in the October and November of every year, we do what we call a holiday seminar. We're not doing one here close to you. We do have an itinerary, and at our table, Bob will give you our speaking schedule in case you have people in other states. We're going to be in Connecticut. We're going to be in Orlando, Florida. And we're going to be in, South Dakota doing a holiday seminar, and then many in Southern California. The holiday seminar is also on video. It's a two-hour video. The seminar is really 3 hours, but we've taken the best of the 3 hours, put it into 2 hours. Gift giving, gift wrapping, building memories, organization for Thanksgiving and Christmas, Christ-centered traditions. And then I do, coming from a Jewish background, I tell the story of Hanukkah, and we have a menorah, and I light all the candles, and it's just a wonderful time of getting organized for the holidays. So the women would come to me and they say, well, what do you cook during the holidays? I mean, it must be boring. And I said, well, I cook exactly what everybody else cooks. We put together a holiday menu. This cookbook is what I use all year whenever I'm having company. It has great recipes. It has a lasagna recipe where you don't have to cook the noodles. You layer them in raw. That's one step you don't have to do. And it's a lot faster, and the noodles cook with the lasagna, and it's wonderful. Orange chicken recipe, which is wonderful. We have a complete, beautiful Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner, from cranberry orange mold to turkey dressing and the whole nine yards. It's all eating right. You cut your calories in half from the regular traditional Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, it's wonderful. So we've given you the tools in which to do that. Now, one of the things we've cooked our meal, and one of the things that really hits my heart and breaks my heart is what happens after that meal is cooked. And after that meal is cooked, we call our family into a meal. And many times they don't show up. We call them and they don't show up, and we call them and they don't show up. Has that ever irritated you? Well, it did me. And I called this little family meeting and I said, I have a problem. I said, I call you to a meal. You don't come when I call you. What can I do about that? And they began to give me some ideas, one of which really worked. They said, if you would give us a two-minute warning, we would finish up what we were doing, and we would come into a meal. So I got myself a little bell, and I ring my little bell, and within 2 minutes, the family comes into a meal. It's just sort of one of those things that happened, and it worked. Now, today, we call our family into a meal, and they come into the kitchen, and they pick up the meal, and they go down, and they sit in front of the television set, and they eat it. Or many times, we may sit at a table or a food bar, and the television's on. And what we need to do, women, is we need to stop and turn off the television set, and we need to sit around the table. We need to have a family meal. If it's only once a week, maybe it could be twice a week, but we need to get back around the table. We need to start talking. See, we haven't talked. We don't know how to talk. And when we talk to the children, we talk to them. We don't hear about them. We don't know how they're feeling. We don't know what they think about something. And so this mom designed this wonderful little tool for us to get our family and our children around the table. And it's called Mom's Candid Questions. And in this jar, there are 150 questions. And we set it on the table. The grandchildren absolutely love it. They beg. They don't want us to stop asking questions. They just love it. We go around the room and go around the table, and they get to pick one, any one out of the jar, and then they read it. If they don't read it, we read it for them. And they have the first opportunity to answer the question. And then if they when they answer it, then the other family can enter in and answer it. We have had such wonderful discussions. Here, I just pulled one out, and it says, what does it mean to love someone? Well, you know what? You begin to hear from your children. You begin to know what love is to them. What is it that you do, you see, that makes them feel that they are loved? Where is the ideal place to live? Describe it. Well, maybe you've moved around a lot of places. Maybe there's something in the child's heart or your heart that you begin to talk about. Well, I just loved it when I lived in Florida. And things start coming out that you never expected. And so they're fun little questions that are not intimidating at all, that they really begin, and you begin to think how you feel. Do you ever feel lonely, and when? Do you know when your children feel lonely? Have you ever realized that maybe they are lonely? And so we begin to talk. Bob and I put this at our breakfast table every morning, and we pull a question out of a jar, and it's just the two of us now. And do you know what? We have learned so much about each other. We're going to be married 38 years at the end of this month, and we're still learning about each other. Why? Because we've pulled questions out of a jar, something that seems really silly. We have another book. You can pick up a price list also at our table, and on that price list we'll give you all the items that we have. But there's another book, and there may be a few of them out there, and it's called Talk to Me, and it's 1,777 Intimate Questions. And we keep it in the car, and we were taking a 15-hour drive. In fact, this would be good for Mamie and her husband to have, because not that she can't talk. I mean, she, but that it's good for her husband because, see, he's more that introvert, and opposites will attract. And so we put it in the car. We drove 15 hours, and we kept asking questions. It was incredible. Now, 1,777 intimate questions. Bob's mother was with us. She was sitting in the back seat. And I'm telling you what we learned about her and her relationship with Bob's father, who has passed away. It was absolutely wonderful. And so we need to start talking. We need to start asking questions. We need to gather around the table. Now we have our family meals in which we can do that. Your More Hours in My Day notebook is going to be your tool to help you organize the foundation of organization for your home, your weekly calendar, your marketing, your menu list, your work planner chart. You have a family expenditure chart so that you keep a record of the expenses for your for the month, every month of the year. And then you also have in here dates and occasions to remember, important numbers, credit card numbers, entertainment. I kind of like this because, you know, we don't entertain too much anymore. But when we do, we've forgotten if we invited them before and what we served them, and so we don't want to serve them the same thing over and over again. So you can keep a little record of who you invited and what you served them. And if you had a good time with them, maybe they were boring or a drag, and you don't want to invite them back again, you can record this on your chart. Just don't let them see the chart. And then you have a little order form at the back, and then look what else you have in here. You have 12 wonderful envelopes, one for every month of the year. All your receipts, your check stubs, all of those things that you need to keep for every month of the year. So what we've been able to do is to help provide for you a tool that will help you to organize some of those important areas in your life. See, organization is not just given to you. I mean, I believe God gave it to me. I believe that He gave me a sense of organization. But the exciting thing about organization is that organization can be taught. And if you leave this room today and you have learned one thing, and you go home and you just implement the one thing that you have learned here at this workshop, it will be worth the 45 minutes that you have sat here in this workshop this morning. And that's all it is. We don't have to go home and do everything. But if we will just learn one thing and implement one thing, it will be worth the time that we have spent together this morning. Father, thank you so much for these women who have been eager and excited, and I just see it in their faces. And thank you, Lord, that we've been able to motivate one another for organization, and most of all, that we can rejoice because this is the day that you have made. Even if we get into the kitchen or into a drawer or whatever it may be, Lord, we know that you are an organized God and that you want us to be organized so that we can have more hours in our day to be able to glorify your name and work for you and serve you. And we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Don't forget your daily planners. God bless you.